I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, as part of our commitment to American Graduate, we're going to talk about chronic absenteeism from school. We're going to talk about the damage constantly missing school does to young people's educations and their lives. We're going to discuss ways to solve the problem. My guests will be Kathy Daniluk of the Indiana Department of Education Attendance Office, Dr. Chad Lockmiller of the IU Center for Evaluation and Education Policy, and Kristen Martin of the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or catching up with us on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited, online, nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, supporting Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Indiana during National Mentoring Month in January. More on how to become a Big Brother Big Sister or be a part of a big couple at bebigforkids.org.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about chronic absenteeism today, about missing school. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. My guests today are Kathy Daniluk of the Indiana Department of Education and the Attendance Office. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Also, Dr. Chad Lockmiller of the IU Center for Evaluation and Education Policy. Chad, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Kristen Martin of the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you all here. Well, let's start a little bit. Let's begin by defining, Kathy, if you would, what we consider chronic absenteeism. This is not, you know, a kid who misses one or two days of school a year because he or she is sick, right?
That's correct. The definition by new Indiana code is any student who's absent 10 days or more that's not excused. In other words, there's not a physician's note or a parent call-in or whatever the attendance policy for that school district is. So it's just missing school and not having a reason to be out of school.
And more than 10 days during the course of a school year.
Correct.
Right? And, Chad, how widespread a problem is this? I mean, how big a problem is it in Indiana and presumably in Indiana in comparison with the rest of the nation?
Based on the research that KEEP has conducted, not only here in Indiana, but also at the...
I should emphasize, KEEP is the...
KEEP is the Center for Education or Evaluation and Education Policy at Indiana University. Okay. The research that KEEP has conducted is not only focused here in Indiana, but it's also focused on... research that other researchers are conducting nationally. And basically what the research is suggesting is that this is a very widespread problem, particularly in large urban school districts, but not exclusive to those districts. In fact, in some studies, we've actually found that chronic absenteeism can be found in rural school districts and smaller suburban school districts at the same or higher rates of prevalence than in large urban systems.
So what is the rate here in Indiana?
The rate in Indiana is slightly above the national average. It's approximately in the, if you look at statewide statistics, it's about 90% average daily attendance. When you start looking at chronic absenteeism, though, Kathy, do you recall from the first report?
I don't, I'm sorry, but I would say that in general, chronic absenteeism is a problem, and that's a little bit different than truancy because you're looking at all absences.
Well, you're anticipating my next question.
You're looking at all absences, whether they're excused or not, for any reason for a student to be out of school. So the goal in Indiana is to reduce absenteeism, whether you're excused or not excused, but keeping our students in school.
And I'm asking Kristen, real quickly, what is the difference between chronic absenteeism and truancy? I mean, I remember when I was a kid, being truant was considered something really, really awful.
That's correct. Like Kathy said, habitual truancy or Habitual truancy is what we use to base criminal charges off of, and that is more than 10 unexcused absences from school. So if you are in here locally in Marion County, you are charged with truancy if you are over the age of 12. If you are under the age of 12, the Marion County Prosecutor's Office will charge you with failure to ensure your child's school attendance, and that is for elementary age students.
So that is the cutoff there. The age 12 thing is about who is considered responsible for the action, and it's the parent if the child is younger than 12. Is it 12 and younger, or is it once you reach you have your 12th birthday, you become responsible?
Generally speaking, there's nothing in the statutory code that requires us to charge based off of age difference. It's something that we make a determination based on middle school, high school children generally are referred to juvenile court. If you are elementary age, then you are referred to the adult division of the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Now, that being said, we do work very closely with the Juvenile Probation Department to determine if there are cases that are more appropriate that fall into their jurisdiction. We're happy to look into that as well.
How many of these kids are we talking about, Kristen? I mean, how many of them do you have to work with or process?
Typically, and I handle the failure to ensure school attendance, so the ones that we are actually prosecuting the parents for, we received 118 referrals last year. Typically, in the last 5 years, we've received anywhere from 125 to 150 referrals a year.
And what's the penalty for, let's take both situations, the failure to ensure attendance, what is the penalty for a parent who does who fails to ensure attendance?
Failure to ensure school attendance is a Class B misdemeanor, which means it's punishable up to 180 days in jail.
180 days in jail. Are there any financial penalties or anything like that?
There are fines that can be assessed, attorney's fees if you hire an attorney, public defender fees if you are unable to afford an attorney, as well as probation fees if the court finds it appropriate to place you on probation.
We are talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. Well, we're talking a little bit about how widespread this problem, and you indicated, Chad, I think, that we're slightly above the average nationally.
When you look at some of the patterns from some of the districts in the states, yes, we're slightly above what other researchers have reported. And I apologize, I'm forgetting what the exact statistic is. What I would actually like to piggyback on something that Kristen just said. When she was describing the kind of the truancy initiatives and the the failure to
ensure
initiatives that she's working
on. I struggled with that one, too.
It says FTE. it's another acronym. The one thing that I would point out is that the research suggests that by the time that kids reach that stage, many things that school districts and school corporations across the state can actually do are already off the table. For many kids, the most important thing that we can do is intervene early, before they've missed like 5 days of school or 4 days of school, rather than waiting until they've missed an entire 10 days out of the school year. The reason that I say that is that the research suggests that those five school absences, those become cumulative, and the damage to the kid's long-term academic success ultimately begins to mount very quickly compared to what the statute and what the court system actually would be looking at in terms of the kids that they're serving.
Why is this a problem? And I ought to take a step back. What does it do to kids? Why should we be concerned about this?
The costs from missing school are actually quite significant. There was a recent report out of the state of California that suggested that school districts in the state lost as much as $1.4 billion per year because kids were missing school and weren't counting toward their enrollment counts for school finance. The other thing that we see is that kids who miss school are also much more likely to drop out of high school, which we know that long-term that can cost into the billions for not only the state but also the nation for kids that aren't going on to get college degrees and are going on to get good-paying jobs.
Oftentimes, so it's like an opportunity cost, a loss of future productivity.
Exactly. And those costs mount very significantly.
And, Kathy, how large a problem is this, in terms of priorities for the Department of Education here in the state?
Well, I think particularly with recent legislation, and in fact it always has been a huge priority for the Department of Education, ensuring that kids are in school. You look at the emphasis on 180 days of instruction, instructional time. We want kids in school learning. And I think that a lot of what we're doing, a lot of what I've been doing, is partnering with different groups, agencies, as well as juvenile judges, juvenile courts, probation, so that we're all working together and we're all on the same page. And I think that's the most important thing, that we not only have resources, but we look at ways, instead of being punitive to parents, that we're embracing them and saying, what can we do to help you? How can we help you better communicate with the school? What's going on in your life that we can provide resources? And Kristen, the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, have developed an excellent model program called PART, Parent Accountability for Truancy Program, that I'm sure Kristen would be happy to share more information about.
I think you've just been queued up there, Kristen. It's all you.
I have. Basically, what our PART program is it started as a diversion program. So these adults that were entering, the parents that were entering into the criminal system, as we were starting to work closely with them, we were identifying other problems and other struggles in their life. The truancy for their children were just really the tip of the iceberg. So we assembled this wonderful panel in partnership with Neighborhood Alliance for Child Safety, who works with Children's Bureau. We're with the Department of Child Services, Kathy with the Department of Education, Dr. Brandy Oliver from Butler University. We gather all of the parents that have been charged in small groups, and we sit down and have conversations with them, try to identify their truancy triggers, come up with a plan to solve that, and then hook them in with local service organizations that can provide them home-based and case management services in their home, to make sure that if there's mental health issues, if there's substance abuse issues, if there's a problem with finding employment, transportation, all of those needs are taken care of as well to get their children to school.
We're talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You were about to say something.
I was just going to say that Tristan's points are really very well taken, because one of the things that we know from the research is that there are numerous causes for students who have become chronically absent and who ultimately become truant and potentially drop out. And so it's not just a one answer kind of a problem. We have to deploy multiple solutions in order to
support kids. Most of the reasons let's start. It sounds like we've got really two different dynamics here. We've got parents who don't send their kids to school, that younger group you were talking about, and then really the truant piece. I may be interpreting this incorrectly, and if I am, please correct me, is that to some degree we've got kids who are sort of checking out of any sort of authority or accountability model, parents
Correct.
Or schools. Mm-hmm. So, Chad, let's start with that smaller group. Why are some parents, not sending their kids to school?
I don't think it's a simple matter of just not sending their kids to school. I think there's a number of barriers for them to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Those things relate to not only being unemployed, but having inadequate transportation, being a single parent and not being able to be there in the morning to help get their son or daughter off to school. The other thing is that some of the factors that we kind of consider in terms of the family structure, those also influence whether or not the kid can come to school. There are studies which suggest that parents and families who live in rental housing versus owning their home are more likely not to be able to get to school on time, because there's more kind of turnover and transiency. They may not know exactly, what the process is for enrolling in a new school. They may not know exactly where the school is that they should be attending. There's a number of things that happen that we kind of forget about when we're actually talking about parents just not sending their kids to school. The other thing I would say is that in addition to that, there's a number of factors that relate directly to the student, which also prevent whether or not they can go to school. Asthma is the leading cause of student absenteeism.
Mm-hmm.
Other chronic health issues also affect student attendance. Obesity affects student attendance. Whether or not a kid perceives their school as a kind of...
So overall, the health concerns, what percentage of this do health concerns
roughly
account for?
I would say that roughly, 80%, Kathy?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
about 80%.
80%. So in some ways, that's a different problem than at least what we think of when we talk about chronic absenteeism. I mean, those are, in some fashion, excused absences, right? but it still deprives the child of the learning opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think what we're doing, we're also, we have initiatives to work with our school nurses on ways to keep influenza from spreading, simple tricks, washing hands, keeping buildings clean, all of those things that help reduce the spreading of illness so that kids don't get sick.
We are talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits today. And as we talk about education today, this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. Right on point, I would say. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships with local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. As I said, we're talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. My guests are Kathy Daniluk of the Indiana Department of Education, Dr. Chad Lockmiller of the IU Center for Evaluation and Education Policy, and Kristen Martin in the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Kathy Daniluk of the Indiana Department of Education, the attendance office, Dr. Chad Lockmiller of the IU Center for Evaluation and Education Policy, and Kristen Martin of the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Kathy, you actually have some news here for us today. You guys are rolling out a new initiative, and you were kind enough to break it here on our program.
So. Yes. In fact, we just launched minutes ago the new chronic absenteeism website, and it's a resource for not only schools but parents as well. The website, if you want me to
Go ahead. Please give me the URL.
Out. It's www.doe.in.gov/absenteeism. So on
go ahead and give that to him again. That's a mouthful.
I know. www.doe.in.gov/absenteeism.
And what will people find on that website?
They're going to find all the research that Dr. Lockmiller worked on, as well as model attendance policies and plans and numerous resources that they can go to combat chronic absenteeism. So we're excited to get that up and rolling and available for all school districts to be able to look into and look at their attendance plans and policies and figure out a way to make improvements.
Is the target audience here more the school systems or the parents?
It's a little bit of both, I would say. I think there's all kinds of simple hints as far as health like washing your hands to high-level research on what other states are doing, and just model plans and policies for schools to refer to.
We are talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
A couple things. I wanted to know what you guys think or who the experts see as this problem here in comparison with other places, not other places in the United States, but other countries, other Western countries, other non-Western countries, because it seems like what I've seen through my kids when they were going through this and they went to, you know, schools out in Madison County, decent school systems, they went through a stage where, my son anyway, they just didn't care. They and he's a normal middle class kid that just him and a big section of his cronies or whatever just did not care. Did not care about going to school, did not care about school, did not think that there is any value in it. And it seems like that's a big problem that I've seen versus, the way that my parents looked at education, the way I looked at education, and what I tried to instill in my kids, the value of education, versus how people are seeing this here versus how people see this in other places, in other Western countries and other maybe third world countries that look at education as a great opportunity versus people here who have all these opportunities and don't see the value in it.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. We'll try to get an answer for you, Robert.
Okay, thanks very much.
Certainly. Well, Chad, I'll start with you. Is there research on whether other countries and their educational systems have similar absentee problems to ours, or challenges might be a better word to use here?
So the difficulty is that the nature of the education systems in other countries are very different from the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and so it's difficult to create research or to look at attendance as being comparable in other nations. So,
well, it sounds like, and I'm sorry to interrupt you,
sure.
but it sounds to me also from what we were talking about at the beginning of the break, too, if 80% of this problem is health-related, you're probably also talking about differences not just in the educational system, but also in the healthcare delivery system.
Exactly.
As well.
There's a number, and that's why it's difficult to talk just about attendance, because attendance is really a symptom of other causes. There's other things that are going unaddressed that are causing kids not to want to go to school. As he was discussing with a large group of children or a group of children that he was familiar with, what he sounds like he was describing was school avoidance or school refusal behaviors, which is something that's actually more related to the child's mental health. And it's based on whether or not they feel safe at school, whether or not they feel engaged in what they're learning, whether or not they actually feel like when they go to school, it's connecting with their interest and their desires. If those things aren't in place, then it's easy to understand why the child doesn't want to attend school. And those are things actually that the school systems, particularly those school systems that are trying to leverage resources and are trying to focus on different ways to improve attendance, that's one of the ways that they can actually improve attendance is by addressing what's going on in the school environment, changing the nature of relationships between teachers and students, focusing in on what's being taught to make sure that it's both rigorous and relevant to the students, and then also looking at just the nature of the school facilities. Is it a safe place to learn? Is it a clean place to learn? Those are all things that can contribute to whether or not a student wants to attend school. Then there's all those other issues related to the student's health, related to the student's family, that also have to be factored in, and that's one of the things that in some of the programs that are here in Indiana, you can actually see schools, corporations working in partnership with the prosecutor's office and with other agencies to try and leverage multiple resources to remove those barriers.
And I got a question, Kristen, in terms of the legal penalties, and we'd established those are not insignificant if you're a parent your child. Now, I should ask, is that a common occurrence? I mean, how often I think you'd mentioned that there were 118 mm-hmm. cases last year that you had to process, and that was a little down. Normally it's somewhere in the 125 to 150 range. Not yet a reason to pop the champagne corks and throw up the confetti, but it seemed like the progress was being made in the right direction. How often do people face those legal penalties? How is there a conviction, or is that penalty assessed?
Generally speaking, we identified that this is really a particular group that you could do a lot of prevention work with. These are not your typical criminals. These are not people that have a lengthy criminal history. And because of that, they're given the consideration of a diversion agreement, which is we will withhold actual formal prosecution if you meet some conditions. And one of those conditions is you must send your child to school. Your child must not have any more unexcused absences. And you have to attend our diversion, which is the part impact panel. Last year, we were able to service 26 defendants through our impact panels from June to October. And of those 26 individuals we met with, 19 of their cases were successfully dismissed.
Given that we've said 80% of this problem is generally health related, and we're going to get to the other 20% here in a moment, but 80% of it, and that a lot of this, I think everyone has agreed, there are multiple factors. Often it can be a single-parent family or a family that's in some economic distress, mm-hmm. What if, okay, junior's not going to school, but mom and dad, you know, junior is sick. Mom and dad really don't have the money to get him or her to the doctor. They're just sort of hoping the problem will get better. So there's no doctor's note to take to the school to make it an excused absence, presumably. And after a while, you get tired of the parents' notes. How do you deal with a situation like that, Kristen? I mean, where it's really, I can't argue that those folks are criminals in any fashion.
We share concurrent jurisdiction on these cases also with the Department of Child Services, who has to investigate any claim of abuse and neglect. In that type of situation, educational neglect is covered by the statute in which DCS, Department of Child Services, can investigate. We do work with them. One of their employees, Tyler Small, who is an educational advocate, does sit on our panel for that exact reason. And we work closely with the schools to make sure that that is getting taken care of. If a family comes to our panel with that particular concern, I know that Kathy has been instrumental in working with those particular parents to make sure that they understand what their rights are at school and how to ask for assistance and get assistance at the school level.
Kathy, real quickly, if there is a situation like that where literally it is the to some degree, the parents lack capacity, the ability. It's not that they don't want to have their children in school, but, you know, there are a combination of factors that prevent them from getting there. What's the best remedy in that case?
I think it's basic communication. And I've been all over the state with court-assisted resolution programs and working with prosecutor's office and probation. And one of the things that we've really uncovered is that parents don't know how to call the school. Sometimes they don't know. They're intimidated by calling the principal or saying what's going on. I've had a parent who was living in their car and was too embarrassed to tell the school that they were homeless and had no place to live. And so I'm being able to facilitate that, as well as a parent who's so depressed that they couldn't get up in the morning to get their kids ready for school. So once you kind of uncover, it's like taking an onion and uncovering the layers and helping with that communication process and setting them up with community resources has been invaluable to the process, rather than throwing a parent in jail or simply not believing the parent that you spent a little time with a school social worker or your school resource officer investigating what's going on. And I think, to me, that's the value of having attendance policies being local, so that the principals know their kids and families and they can determine whether or not an absence should be excused or unexcused and help with a plan to resolve whatever issues are going on with the family.
We're talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. So we've identified 80% of these are really some sort of health problem, asthma and all of that. Let's talk about the other 20%, because that sounds to me like at least there's some relatively easy way to get into the majority of these. That is, if you tend to solve the health problem or at least mitigate it, you've addressed most of the cause of the problem. The other 20%, I suspect, may be a little more complicated, Chad.
The other 20% is a little bit more complicated, and not to say that the health challenges aren't
complicated
either.
No, I'm not. But
I think what the research would tell us is that the most important thing we can do, and Kathy's already signaled this, and Kristen's already signaled this, is focus on prevention. Educating parents about the importance of attending school regularly, their son or daughter attending school regularly, making sure that parents from all socioeconomic spectrums. That's an important thing. We've talked a lot about parents without the resources to get their kids to school. But if a kid's missing school and they're from a more affluent family and they're taking family trips and things, that's just as detrimental to a kid if they're missing school for a health-related reason or for another reason. The other thing that I would say is that the other big piece that schools can do is focus on making sure that the adults that work in the building are connecting with the kids on a daily basis. There's a lot of evidence to support that a program out of the University of Minnesota, it's called Check and Connect, is very effective with working to match mentors and monitors, which are basically adults working in the building with kids who are attending the school on who are attending the school, they not only kind of mentor the kid to make sure that they understand the importance of being there, but they also monitor their attendance, and they look for those warning signs when a kid starts missing 3 or 4 days to intervene and start figuring out, okay, what's the issue? One of the other things that we found in the research to get at that 20% is making sure that principals at the building level are aware of their own attendance patterns and their own attendance data. Many times that's data with all of the other data points that principals have to work through that gets put on the shelf, and yet it's just as important. There was an interesting article recently in the Seattle Times that came out about a middle school in southeast Seattle, high poverty, highly diverse, low achieving, historically middle school, that's seen significant gains in student achievement by focusing on student attendance. So for the building administrators,
just getting them in the door was
getting them in the door was one of the big challenges. So that 20%, yeah, it's a challenge to get to, but there's a number of things that schools can do and that they're already doing that can, if they just fine-tune it slightly and focus in on those kids who are missing school, they can see some significant gains.
What are these kids who, you know, in that 20%, what reasons do they give for missing school? And I'll throw that out to anyone. I'm not sure
Kathy's the expert.
I think I've heard a little bit of everything, but most of all, it's a disinterest or this instant gratification. When I'm in detention centers, most kids want to be entrepreneurs or professional athletes, and not realizing the challenges. In this economy, I think it's highly critical that kids receive an education, a high school diploma, so that they can get even a low-paying job requires a high school diploma. College degree. So I think it's that education. And I've reached several kids who are in detention who get it, and then they go back and they're very successful in school. But sometimes it just takes somebody who cares, a mentor, probably is the most effective way to get to our kids, to talk about what's important, priorities, a better groups to associate with. Churches stepping up have been very effective in finding alternative for our kids so that they understand not only do they need to have fun things to do, but they also need to focus on education.
I'm going to try to frame this question carefully because, you know, I'm well aware I'm about ready to walk out into the middle of a minefield by asking, you know, given that education policy in this state, in this country, have become so volatile, you know, the battles have become so volatile and so contentious. The cliche is obviously that if the kid tunes out of school or whatever, backs away, that it is the educator's fault or their responsibility. How much of this is a school problem? How much of this is a parent problem? How much of it is a cultural problem? Everyone's avoiding eye contact with me. I feel like I'm back in the classroom now, and I've just asked the question no one wants to answer.
I'll take the tough question.
Okay.
I think it's everybody's problem. I think it's equally shared. I think it's a parent problem. I think it's a community problem. I think it's law enforcement problem, and I think it's a juvenile justice problem, and I think it's a school problem. And to solve that problem, I think everybody has to work together. And creatively, we found ways to do that and have been very effective. Kristen's data shows that effectiveness. And so I think we're on the road to finally figuring out that we need to have a strong marriage to be able to get to make a difference.
You mean a strong
partnership
among all the parts of it. It's not disparaging single parent homes or anything.
Correct. Like, it's everyone.
Everyone needs to solve this. And that Kristen, just to cover the bases on this, you know, we've talked an awful lot about the parents who are held responsible, but above a certain age, what are the penalties for, say, a 15-year-old who constantly skips school?
Sure. You could be charged with truancy. Truancy is a status offense. A status offense just means that...
like curfew or whatever.
Correct, yeah. Somebody under the age of 18 is subject to liability for that. And that basically means you have been unexcused from school. Your punishment is generally some form of probation, although there is a statute that does allow a juvenile court to consider placement outside of the home if there's been a violation of probation and a written warning issued to that child.
We are talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. And as we talk about education today, this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships with local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about chronic absenteeism today on No Limits. My guests are Kathy Daniluk of the Indiana Department of Education, the attendance office, Dr. Chad Lockmiller of the IU Center for Evaluation and Education Policy, and Kristen Martin of the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or locate us on Twitter at wfyi. Well, just before we went to break, we were talking about really the breakdowns of whose responsibility this is. And Kathy had made the argument that really it's everybody. It's a shared responsibility and that it has to be combated from a lot of different angles. We've pivoted, we've talked an awful lot about causes here, and I think in this last segment we probably ought to talk about solutions. Are there places that are addressing this problem very successfully, maybe more successfully than Indiana is? And I'll start with Chad on that one.
Yes, there are a number of reports and studies that are available from Denver to Philadelphia to New York City, Washington, D.C. There are a number of different studies out there that suggest that there are things that school districts are doing that can be effective in improving attendance. A lot of that relates to, as we said earlier, the conditions in the school building, how parents are able to access the supports, and also how teachers and other adults in the school are able to interact with students.
Well, give us some examples, if you could.
So there's a program right here in Indiana. It's Carmel Clay Schools, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That they have we've got another acronym here. It's
Project Attend.
Project Attend. They're doing some wonderful
PA.
Work. PA. Yeah. There's also another program called ACES, is that correct?
Correct. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. That is ACES. Project Attend, I believe, is Hendricks County.
Yes.
And then Project Rebuild in Gary.
Yes.
Community schools.
We've got some wonderful partnerships here in Indiana that are actually connecting the prosecutor's office, social service agencies, businesses, and other community organizations to schools and school corporations so that kids are able to access the resources. The other thing that we found is that there's a number of mentoring programs nationally that show great promise in improving attendance. One of the most common, and actually it's one of the most familiar, is Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
There are numerous...
Subject of a show here just a couple of weeks ago.
There are numerous reports out there that suggest that that's one of the most effective. The other thing is there are some more recent studies that focus in on the importance of making attendance part of the student's larger achievement profile. And so celebrating good and improving mm-hmm. attendance, school districts can do that in a pretty reasonable way by investing with partnerships and with businesses and giving things like a $5 McDonald's gift certificate or a small token just to recognize that, look, we understand you're making it to school every day. Congratulations. Way to go. That's just as important as doing well in class, being here on time, doing well on tests, being active in your community, and all those other things that we expect kids to do.
You keep mentioning the openness of the schools is important and their ability to access resources. What students and presumably parents, what are the resources that are most important for them to access? What things are we talking about specifically? Kathy, I'll throw it to you.
I know, you were looking at me. For example, having buildings open for the extracurricular activities after school, an opening climate environment, which I would say most schools, you can go into any school and you feel that warmness from the principal, that greeting, that you feel comfortable in communicating with that person are all very critical.
But are there specifically, that sounds like, okay, a hearty handshake and mm-hmm. maybe a hug every now and then is important. And mm-hmm. I get that human element. But when we talk about resources, are we talking about them being able to get to the library, to use the computers, to, you know, visit a school nurse? Or is it something as basic as also being able to get a meal there?
It's all of the above.
All of
the,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You hit it. You answered your question.
All right. Well, that's normally not the way I work, but that's okay. Conversations are better if they're, you know, not just me doing stream of consciousness. But so in terms of this, what are, when we talk about like the examples you mentioned, Denver, Philadelphia, what's Denver doing?
Denver has an active partnership with the prosecutor's office, plus a number of community agencies and organizations that are working with the school district to provide support for students who are missing school. Philadelphia, one of the reasons that Philadelphia has had or has seen a number of kind of improvements is the same thing: business partnerships, community agency partnerships. In Baltimore, there's a lot of emphasis around this notion of kind of community networks and community partnerships that's been promoted by researchers at Johns Hopkins. And really what that kind of model is investing in is not only bringing parents to the table, but also bringing other various community organizations to the table so that they, too, are part of providing that support for kids to make sure that they're getting to school on time and regularly attending.
How did the school you mentioned in Seattle turn the attendance thing around and get students in the door? What sort of incentives did they use, or interventions, whatever?
They used a combination of incentives and interventions. One of the things that they did was they extended the school day, and they made the school facility accessible to students both before school and after school. They provided meal programs in the morning and at lunch. They also provided direct access to community organizations. Some of that was funded through philanthropic partners, and so those resources were made available through private resources. And then they also used a number of monitoring and data management type techniques at the building level so that they could look at which kids were potentially at that 4 or 5 day mark and when they could how quickly they could intervene. They also did things like if they didn't have I wouldn't signal just this school, but one of the best examples is coming out of New York City. Under the Bloomberg administration, they invested in an advertising campaign where they had celebrities that the kids would recognize on the radio talking about the importance of attending school. And then if the kid missed school, they established a computerized telephone system where a celebrity would actually call the kid's house and leave a message saying, "We expect you to be in school, and we hope you're going to be in school tomorrow," and, you know, that kind of a message. All of those kinds of things, ranging from the simplest thing of just looking.
I could see how that could backfire.
It could, you know, yes.
Oh, I stay away from school and I get a call from LeBron James.
Yes.
But
yes. Which celebrity matters, I think.
Yeah.
So there are a number of different ways that you can approach it. There's no one solution that'll work for any individual school. There's no one solution that will work for every school. Each individual school is going to be unique and is going to have to establish its own solutions.
Kristen, what do you think is the biggest roadblock here to really cracking the chronic absenteeism? Would there be different laws, policies, or whatever that we could enact that might make a difference here?
You know, honestly, from our work, particularly as it relates to the failure to ensure parents that we're really engaging, the roadblock that we see is there, unfortunately, just they have no stability in their household. And so just trying to work with the families to find stability, to have the education and the understanding of how to ask for assistance, how to advocate for their child, and what services are out there. That is why we piloted this program, mm-hmm. To start with just that simple, how do we get the kids to come to school? All of this, unfortunately, it's been a very large majority of single mothers that we've had in our program, and the very large majority of them didn't have an understanding of what was available to them at the school level. So providing them that education of understanding you have to call your child in absent and let them know where your child is. Mm-hmm. You have to let them know what's going on in your life so we can help you. Generally speaking, we'd like to say that court is the last stop. we would like to get to you before that, which is why we're going to start doing just prevention work. Instead of filing cases, we're going to be working with local community organizations to work with the families at the initial set, right when these absences are happening, so we can identify their problems to get their children back in school before charging.
We're talking about chronic absenteeism here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Kathy, I'm going to ask a similar question here, but I guess the handle, biggest roadblock, I mean, it sounds to me like some of this also is a procedural thing, that investing in software to track mm-hmm. absenteeism so that it's not something notifying. But in budget-challenged times for school systems, the question, do we invest in the software and pull a, you know, the equivalent cost, pull a teacher out of the classroom, has to be a difficult call for any school system to make. How much of this is about money?
I don't know that it's really about money. It's more about time than anything, taking that investment. Chronic absenteeism, that definition that was defined in the recent legislation, Senate Bill 338, is a data collection where we're going to be able to report that and show schools what their data is. So that really comes from the Department of Ed. Secondly, this has become part of their school improvement plan, so there is a question that they'll be submitting to the Department of Ed where they'll need to really look at their absenteeism rate and make recommendations for improvement. I guess I go back to communication, and I go back to what I see at courts, and when I see parents realize that law enforcement, juvenile courts, all of us are there to help, not to take their kids away or not to lock them up, but we want to reduce and minimize those barriers to help them have housing, transportation, meals, just assistance for the 10-year-old that has to get up and get their little baby brother or sister to school on time. All of those things, I think, in working together, it's back to that partnership and bridge building.
Well, and that raises another, and I guess I would throw this one to Chad. How much of this problem, because we have kept coming back to this idea of communication, and what I hear coming out of it is that a lot of these parents don't necessarily see the school system or the legal system as a partner. They see mm-hmm. it rather as an adversary.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How much of that, you know, what ways do we break down then that kind of culture of mistrust?
You know, I think one of the things that you focus on is not only the relationship between teachers and students, but also between teachers and parents. Parents, I think, are inevitably going to feel more comfortable talking to a teacher than they will to a building administrator. The other challenge is that then making pathways of communication between the teacher and the principal to be able to relay those concerns of the parent to the administrator, and then allowing the administrator to help intervene and start connecting the parent with resources. The other thing I would note, one of the things that you asked earlier was for some statistics, and one of the requests of Kathy's department was that we take a look at kind of what the nature of court-assisted programs are in the state mm-hmm. of Indiana. There aren't many school districts across the state that are currently using court-assisted programs of the kind that Kristen is talking about. In fact, when we surveyed all 289 school district school superintendents this summer, we only found that about a quarter of them actually had a program like this in place, and that the vast majority of those programs were a relatively recent addition. So there's a number of ways that I think school districts can augment their infrastructure through these partnerships and through these programs so that they have additional resources on hand. Some of that may come from reallocating resources that are currently being used elsewhere. Some of it may come from raising new revenues or raising new resources, either through grants or partnerships. But there are a number of things that school districts still can do and that they don't appear to be doing yet across the state.
Kristen, let's assume that for the moment, I'm the parent of a 15-year-old who is skipping school. How should I deal with that? I mean, I would think if you're in that position, you've got A, you're frustrated beyond belief, mm-hmm. But B, you've got a lot of conflicted feelings about it. You know, I don't necessarily want to call you, Kristen, because I don't want to.
see my child dragged into the legal system. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I want to solve the problem. What's a good way to go about that?
There are lots of different ways to go about it, but I would say the first is, again, going back to what we've talked about, is just communication. Talking to your child, what is going on at school, engaging the school administrative staff, the school counselor, their teachers, what's going on in school that is keeping my child from wanting to go there. And then, you know, the prosecutor's office do provide crime education programs that we have done in Marion County, where we talk to kids of middle school and high school about the consequences of behaviors to prevent them from going in the system, because that is what you really don't want to happen. Because once you are into the system, the school to prison pipeline is something that's very real. And once you are in the system, your likelihood of not obtaining not only your education, but further engaging in criminal behavior is pretty high risk.
Which is the larger problem, the failure to ensure attendance, or the truancy, which is the above 12-year-old thing. Are the numbers greater for kids as they get older?
Generally speaking, I'm not involved.
I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot a little bit, but
from what I see at juvenile court, because I did start my career in juvenile court, it's pretty comparable. Mm-hmm. We chose to do our prevention efforts at the parent level, just to prevent those children from then becoming future truants. So that's why we've kind of made our investments to pilot where we are. Not to say that we won't be able to pilot in the future, engaging middle school and high school.
Is it easier to intervene when they're younger?
Yes.
Yes.
Research makes that very clear.
Is there like a break point that, you know, if there's a problem when a child is 8 years old, you've got a shot, but
research
if it's 13, no?
Research out of Baltimore would actually suggest that if you haven't intervened by fifth grade, you're going to be facing kind of the accumulative effects of poor attendance that'll start affecting middle school and high school, and then likely lead to a dropout.
And some of this, is it a problem that I'm gathering just from probably interpreting what you're saying here, is that if you don't get it early, then it becomes a cumulative thing. The child stops
exactly
performing
right.
Well in school. School becomes less fun, so yep. He or she stays away.
That's exactly right.
And if it's not fifth grade, you say? I mean, is there a point where it gets, the success rate becomes just almost so abysmal that you can't deal with it?
Fifth grade is what the research would say, but Kathy, in more practical experience, would you offer a different perspective?
I would probably agree. It's about fifth grade where that pattern really kicks in, and where kids figure out whether school is important or not, and parents mm-hmm. are involved or not.
Kathy, we've got just a couple of seconds. Why don't you toss out the URL again so that
it
people
is.
Know
www-
where to go for help?
Oh, certainly. Thank you. www.doe.in.absentee.org. I'm sorry. Let me
start
again.
Over.
www.doe.in.gov/absenteeism.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word. Thank you all for what has been a fascinating conversation. My guests have been Kathy Daniluk, Dr. Chad Lockmiller, and Kristen Martin. We will be back on Thursday when we are going to be talking about elder fraud here on No Limits. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.